Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Active Radio KHII 88.9 FM Podcast. We really appreciate you joining us today. My name is John Hurt, and we're going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our community. By sharing knowledge through our conversations, we will try to impart some information you may need about what is happening in the Tularosa Basin and across southern New Mexico. So let's get to the interviews.
And good morning. It is 8:05. I'm Mike Durler with you and chewing on some chips and salsa. Joining me in the studio this morning, Michelle Perry with Learn New Mexico. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, Mike. I got this breakfast special delivered to me today.
Yeah, Bob Flott asked you can't believe he did that.
He found me some chips and salsa. Unfortunately, he did not find me the rest of my order.
I know, but... I just, you know, you sucking on a margarita during our show could be very interesting.
We could talk all day.
Yeah, but it'd be a lot like me heckling at a concert. So it'd be great. So.
It would.
But anyway, you just chew away and talk
okay,
and stuff.
Okay,
and,
all right.
Not a problem here. So.
I'll sit over here.
There you go. So, hey, today we got an interesting topic.
Yes.
Yeah, the benefits of bilingual education.
Absolutely.
You know, I see some importance there. Maybe not what I was taught growing up as I learned English, you know, and learned how to talk in school.
Right.
I taught English, of course, and stuff. But my dad was in the Navy.
Oh, yes.
He taught me Navy French.
So that's very colorful language.
It'll get you, it'll create colors on your body when you say in front of your mom.
That's right.
Black and blue.
That's right.
But that's not what we're talking about.
Right. So, you know, learning language just in itself alone, you know, we're born into this world and we begin early learning how to communicate with the world around us. And so learning language is a very complex but necessary process. Our brains do amazing work in trying to articulate our thoughts and put them into words. And then beyond that, reading and then perceiving others and their language, and not only from verbal language to body language. So language in general is super fascinating to me, like just that acquisition of language. And as an educator for my entire life, I would say learning both English and another language minimally, therefore bilingual, is so beneficial and so important to not only our increasingly shrinking world, you know, the fact that we speak hundreds and hundreds of languages across the world. Our world is increasingly shrinking, and we need to be able to communicate with the world around us, but also for our brain. So learning multiple languages is beautiful for the synapses and the neurons that fire in our brain, and it makes us literally smarter.
Wow. That's something else. Now, you take that. There are some people in this world that have done great with multiple languages. The most recent one was our former First Lady, Melania Trump, speaks six languages.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I sit there and I'm amazed at that.
Yeah.
How does a person learn more than one language, more than their native tongue? I mean, it is a challenge. I took Spanish in high school. Yeah, failed that. You know, so.
Well, there's levels of acquisition. So I can acquire a language to that of maybe a 5-year-old. You know, limited vocabulary, inability to express full thoughts, definitely no higher level vocabulary, you know, academic vocabulary. So you can acquire language to that level. Or you could acquire language proficiently to where you can have full conversations in multiple languages. And so in a lot of countries outside of the United States, it is incredibly valuable and it is intrinsic as to part of their educational systems that they learn languages early and consistently. And that they grow up in environments that are inclusive of multiple languages.
Yeah.
And so a lot of foreign people to America will speak English as a standard language for us, you know, for us in America, but they will also speak their native tongue and likely another language. So I was in Austria a few years ago, and I speak limited Spanish and limited German. Mm-hmm. That probably of maybe a 6-year-old. Yeah. So I was using my German in Austria, and then Spanish just slipped in there.
Yeah.
And this young lady I was speaking to, who is Austrian, she lit up because she recognized that Spanish, and she started speaking to me in Spanish.
Wow.
So neither one of us were using our native language at mm-hmm. that moment. And it was this beautiful connecting moment, and we laughed, and we because neither one of us would have imagined the other would have known Spanish, right. You know. So it was this really neat connecting moment. But learning multiple languages in Europe is a standard. You know, yeah. they will of course be born into their native language, but then they learn English early and they learn it consistently. Mm-hmm. And that kind of leads me into talking about how we approach multilingualism here in the United States.
Yeah, because when you think about it, over in Europe, English is one of their extra languages that they learn. I think a lot of that had to do with the French got tired of us butchering their language, so they learned English, and so we can just go there and order our food without butchering their language. So,
well, you know. And remember, England itself was a superpower in history, yeah. So yeah, therein lies that.
That too.
A conquering superpower of all nations.
Well, the importance of this covers a lot of areas. First of all, when you look at the world economy, and business, doing business with other countries and stuff, that's beneficial. China, Japan, Australia, the United States, Canada, which has 2 or 3 languages, Mexico, and so forth and so forth. You know, that's an important area of having multiple language, but also in education.
Correct.
And let's talk about the education side.
So in public education, we are allocated funds by the federal government should, the public education entity, like a district, like a school district, would apply for, they're called Title III funds. Mm-hmm. And Title III funds from the federal government provide support, financial support to programs that will teach bilingualism. And so what does bilingualism really mean? There's two philosophies there. It is, whatever native language you have, here in our region, it's typically Spanish. So we'll just use Spanish as the example. So a native Spanish speaker comes into an American school system and they are immediately taught English. And the idea there is that they leave that Spanish behind and they are taught English. And to me, that's a travesty. But that is the typical model, is that they're trained English so that they can catch up in English, so that they can be taught academically in English. The sooner, the better. And that is important, learning English. Don't get me wrong. You just heard me say my multilingualism is important. So if you are a monolingual Spanish speaker, it is important to you to learn another language, just like a monolingual English speaker learns another language.
Right.
But there is this other model that and academia would battle over this philosophy, these theories all the time. But another model to consider is called dual language. And as a principal back long ago in my my lifetimes before, I was very, very proud to host a dual language model. Mm-hmm. And so in my school, our preschoolers would come in at age 3 and they would spend a large proportionate amount of their day in learning in Spanish, whether they were English or Spanish native. They would learn Spanish. And then they would go into the next year of school and we would shrink that percentage. And they would go into the next year of school and we would shrink that percentage. And then eventually, by the time that they would hit like 3rd grade, they are equal, the parts of their day were in Spanish and English. Now, there's a danger to that. And this is why this theory is debated so heavily. Because should that child leave that setting in which they're learning half and half at that moment, then their language will be at a detriment in both languages. Mm-hmm. Because now they've split the difference and they are neither proficient in either language at that point.
Right.
So that dual language program, that it has to carry them through at least 5th grade. And then a child can be considered completely dual lingual. And that is our goal. And so these models exist typically in southern New Mexico. New Mexico in general embraces typically this model. But other states across the country, not necessarily. States that have high numbers of immigrants would embrace a bilingual and perhaps a dual language model. But here in New Mexico, I think we must value, our culture is a tri-culture state, and we must value the Spanish language. And being able to learn Spanish and English, both proficiently side by side, is an attribute. And so language as a deficit, language as an asset, and language as a right. Mm-hmm. These are all conversations that we could have about bilingualism.
Yeah. When you said something a little bit ago about the, I forgot what word you actually used, but when I think about this, Spanish, English, and Native American, Apache.
Tri-culture. Our state is a tri-culture state.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Our Native American population has their own language. Mm-hmm. And what, unfortunately, we've seen throughout hundreds of years of history is that they're losing that culture. They're losing right. that. And so I know from experience with working with our friends in Mescalero that they're working very hard as a tribe to maintain their language. Mm-hmm. And theirs is not a written language. Theirs is a completely verbal language. Yeah. That has to be passed down from generation to generation, and what a travesty that would be if they lost their language.
Yeah,
it's losing a part of your culture.
Yeah, absolutely, and you're right. They don't have an alphabet.
No,
it's all pictograph.
Well, and verbal language, and I mean, not even they don't write things down. I mean, they don't have an. And through the last 50 years, they've acquired, you know, the ability to use letters and to indicate sounds and things like that, of course. But originally, the original language is not, it's not like English. You know, somebody, you know, 1,000 years ago took down to writing in an English alphabet, and then therefore we still have it to this day, but not their culture.
Wow. But how interesting would it be to be able to learn that language?
How interesting would it be indeed? And so, and it's more than just like a novel idea. It's more than a novelty. You know, it's more than I'm going to learn Spanish so that I can go vacation down in Mexico. Right. It's more than that. It's your actual dynamics inside your brain. What happens inside the neurons and your ability to think different ways, your ability to creatively look at anything around you and be able to describe it in multiple ways with multiple uses of language.
Well, I guess the next thing I want to ask is, how do we do this?
Right. So that goes back to that. Are you going to be bilingually educated or are you going to be dual lingually educated? Mm-hmm. And so to access these funds, such as Title III, and to use them in a way that is best for students to be taught both languages early, it takes a commitment from a community. A community that says, I value this. I want my kids to be multilingual. Mm-hmm. And I just... In the U.S., typically, we're in English. Our primary language is typically English across the entire nation, and we don't necessarily demonstrate that value.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really like a paradigm shift. And I think, personally, that as our world continues to shrink and I can access my friend in Austria, I have a friend in Bahrain, I have a friend in the Netherlands, I have a friend in Italy, and as we start making friendships across the world, I think that it will become more valuable to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, when I look back on the past, with my past, I remember back in high school that, for a Spanish class, there would be about 10 to 15 people in the class every hour that the Spanish class was held. And in German class, maybe a dozen or less. But in French, 30 kids every hour were in the French class. And I think it was just the romanticism of the time with France.
Oh, yes.
You know, why that happened and stuff.
Right,
and
there was.
And a lot of these classmates of mine still speak French.
Uh-huh.
My grandfather, who was 3 years old when his father escaped Germany, My grandfather fought in World War One, for the United States, and my dad fought in World War Two. My grandfather, when he learned English, and then when they got married, he married a German girl that he came over on the boat with when they were both 3 years old. They played together, God. And they got married. My grandfather forbid German to be spoken in the house.
Yep.
Yeah, stopped it. And I think that would have been a great language.
But at that time, the acculturation to become part of an English-speaking community in the United States of America was more important and more valued than holding on to the preservation of your own culture. Yeah. Because it was just, I'm an immigrant, I'm coming here, and I want to adapt quickly, and I want to be part of this American dream.
Right.
And that made sense for the time.
Yeah.
And so, but that was a very different time.
Right.
Very, where it took, you know, a good 5 weeks to cross, you know, the Pacific Ocean and so, or the Atlantic Ocean. So, you know, I have to remind everybody that we're just not there anymore.
Right.
And yes, that did happen. Mm-hmm. That did happen, that almost a shame. Like, yeah. I don't want you to know that I have a different native tongue, but now it's so much more important because I can access the entire world in a single click.
Yeah. How much better would it have been had my grandfather allowed German to be spoken at the same time having the English and retaining both?
Right.
You know, it probably would have been a great thing. But right. There is not a Durler generation or family in this country right now that can speak German.
Right.
You know, and that's really sad, you know, so, but.
Well, and the other thing is, if you don't use it, you lose it. And, and your native tongue, you will hold on probably forever. But, but like, if you're a second language learner and you're not using it regularly, and that goes back to the model of utilizing the language within your academic setting and having to understand what you're being taught in that second language, that's where that comes into play, because total immersion is going to be the best way to learn a second language.
Right.
And so if you're not immersed in it, if you're not having to use it on a continual basis, then it floats away. Like, I know Spanish and I know German, but Lord knows, I know it like I said, maybe a six-year-old knows it.
Yeah.
And so, and that's what those classes in high school were meant to do. Yeah. They were meant to introduce you to, you know, the primary aspects of a language to get you by, or you know certain vocabulary. You may not be able to articulate it very well in full, complete, fluid sentences, but at least you could get by. And then if you have an interest and a spark, from there you go and immerse yourself in that language.
Yeah.
Now, about immersion. So today I don't necessarily have to go to the country of origin to be immersed. Today I can pop in a headset. Remember how I brought that headset and I showed you? I can be in a virtual world in which I'm learning that language. And there are apps in there, in that headset, that I can access. And I'm now in that world, fully immersed in a virtual reality.
Wow.
And that's where I think language acquisition can be really bolstered in our educational setting, is by use of the virtual environment. Because we know that a teacher teaching you in the front of the classroom how to conjugate Spanish verbs, and it's repetitive and it's out of context, and it's, you know, it's that skill and drill, because that was the typical language acquisition model for a second language, that it teaches you to be that of a 5-year-old.
Yeah.
But a full immersion experience, you accelerate that learning because you're completely immersed.
Mm-hmm.
So.
What do you think about these products like Rosetta Stone and stuff? Are they good? Are they not good? What?
Well, Rosetta Stone, Duolingo, Babbel, all of these programs out there, these apps are awesome, again, to get exposure. You're going to skill and drill. You're going to interact with them in a two-dimensional setting, and it will depend on how much you use it, how often you use it, to what, you know, degree are you committed. If you're on it about 10 minutes a day, then it's probably not going to reap you're not going to reap the benefits that you probably want.
Okay.
So, you know, it comes back to the user experience and the user commitment. Hands down, best way to learn a second language is go to that country and spend some time living there.
You know, it seems, as we've been talking here, it seems like the most important thing about dual language. It helps the brain develop and makes the person a little bit, helps the person become more intelligent.
Most certainly. And not only that, it opens doors for careers.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, go look on Indeed and look at positions that say, you know, Spanish language preferred. And they're more than half.
Yeah.
And so when you are an English and a Spanish speaker fluently, doors open to you that aren't open to others who are just monolingual. And you will make more money in your life. And it, and we have to look at it like that. That is, it's an asset, not a deficit. Being multilingual is an asset. It's going to help you. It's going to be good for you. It's going to open doors that otherwise wouldn't have been opened.
Yeah. Wow. Now, with Learn New Mexico, how are you contributing with this? How are you making this happen?
So, as you know, we have that VR lab, and of course, I can't help but bring it up. And so we, at NMSUA, we have five Oculus headsets, and inside those headsets is this wonderful app we use called Mondly, and it is that immersive environment where you're actually in a setting. So pick your language, whatever it is, hundreds of languages to choose from. Say you want to speak Chinese. Mandarin Chinese is a pretty popular language these days.
Yeah.
And so say that's the language. And so it plops you down into a Chinese community and you look around and you have to hail a taxi. You have to order at a restaurant. You have to interact with a hotel clerk and, you know, just these standard day-to-day things that you would have to do in any typical city environment. Now you have to do it in Chinese. And then the whole program is built to support you in interacting in that immersive environment.
Wow. Fascinating.
So that's what I would say. And so on that note, I'm starting research in officially my research study for my dissertation. And so if there are any teachers out there, secondary teachers listening right now, I need you to contact me because I would like you to participate. So I need to get that plug in there because we are utilizing that VR lab for active research. And then all of this research is accumulated and will be published on the effects of how teachers, educators interact with immersive virtual reality.
Yeah. Wow. I tell you, you know, Michelle, there's not a topic on here that we couldn't spend days talking on. Last time it was study skills and time management. We probably could have spent, have you in every day, probably could have spent 5 days on just that alone.
Well, you know, I can talk paint off a wall. And so here I am. I'm just going on, and I can go on for days.
Well, no, but it's great information and important that people know this stuff. Next time you're up, we're going to be talking about the latest advancements in educational technology. Now, I got to tell you, we thought we were the cat's meow when I was a junior in high school because we had this great big VCR and this beta tape.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You like, put that tape in there and magic happens.
Watching a movie in the classroom.
No more reel-to-reel for you.
Yeah. You know, so that was like, wow. And now all of a sudden I can watch anything I want on my phone, apps on my TV, my smart TV, internet, you know.
Well, technology advancement only accelerates exponentially.
Yeah.
And so the time that it took for the internet to be, you know, invented and then commonly used, now we're halving that time with the next iteration of technology evolution. Yeah.
So that's going to be a fun talk.
Yes. And near and dear to my heart because that's my passion.
That's your passion right there and stuff. So people want to find out about bilingual education, time management, and this other stuff. How do they get a hold of you?
So real simple. I have a website and it's learnnewmexico.com, all spelled out. learnnewmexicospelledout.com. And then my email is michelle@learnnewmexico.com.
There you go. Check it out, folks. Next month, we're going to be talking about the latest advances in education technology. I can't wait to get into that one.
Me too.
Yeah. Hey, thanks a lot. The bilingual thing, important for jobs, education, industry, social aspects of it. I mean, it's just, it's a good thing. It should happen. I wish my grandfather would have taught me German.
Yeah, well, it's never too late, Mike. Yeah,
well, he's dead.
No, well, for you. Oh. Yes, probably he couldn't, but you could.
I could. Well, You know, sometimes I ascribe to the philosophy old dogs just don't learn new tricks, you know. So, but I've changed in that aspect a lot, too. So, hey, we look forward to talking to you again next month.
Me, too.
And keep it going. LearnNewMexico.com.
Very good.
Yeah. Michelle at New Mexico.
LearnNewMexico.com.
Michelle at LearnNewMexico.com for the email. Check it out, folks. Michelle Perry. We look forward to talking to you next month.
Thank you so much. It's been a great time.
We are Active Radio, 88.9 FM, KHII Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and 102.3 KEDU Ruidoso.